dinged up in last night's game? Or are you a weekend warrior that still thinks you got what it takes to play, but nagging injuries are slowing you down?
It's time to talk to some of the region's top sports medicine specialists. This is the Midwest Orthopedic Sports Medicine Show.
All you ever wanted to know about sports medicine, and maybe just a little bit more.
Welcome to the Midwest Orthopedic Sports Medicine Show on Sports Radio 105.7 FM, The Fan. I'm Mike McGivern alongside my co-host this week, Dr. Brian McCarty. Go to mymosh.com for more information on Dr. McCarty. Brian, how are you today, sir?
Hey, I'm doing great. Thank you for having me.
Happy Thanksgiving.
Nice to be back here.
Man, it's good to have you back.
Yeah, it's great.
Yeah, it's like old times.
Happy Thanksgiving to you as well. Yeah,
thanks.
Yeah, back in the old original team.
Yeah, well, this is your baby, so I'm hoping that I'm doing you proud with this show.
No doubt. It's great.
Hey, a lot of family in town and stuff?
Yeah, we had a beautiful hosted group of 23 people last night. It was awesome. I love Thanksgiving. None of the commercialism of the other holidays and all of the wonderful family time. And I think we all should take a moment and be thankful for all the things that we have. And boy, we have a lot. So yeah,
we do. And I agree with you on that. That I love Thanksgiving. It might be my favorite. We go to my sister Colleen's house out in Cedarburg. And family comes together. There was no politics spoken, which I think everybody was happy about. Had some good food, watched some football, told some stories, a lot of laughs, caught up with some family members, and it was really good.
Yeah,
had some leftovers, too.
That's awesome. Yeah, we did the same thing. We tried to avoid politics, and we did make a pledge. Our pledge was to make the world a little bit better as individuals for next year. And I think if everyone does that, you know, we'll find that common ground that we all seek so much.
Brian, run for office. I'll vote for you.
All right. We'll see. We'll see. I don't know if I could.
That one, I know we disagree on a few things, but, and we had this conversation prior to us going on air. I agree with you that there's got to be some place that we can all have common ground. And if we all just make the pledge that your family made, I think a year from now, it'll be a better place.
I agree. So let's move on with that thought in mind.
So Green Bay Packers, can we start with them? Man, it's tough to watch right now.
It is. It's like watching a third-string team playing, and it's certainly not what we've become accustomed to. You know, those of us old enough, Mike, like you and me, we remember the Packers looking like this back many years ago, and we've become really accustomed to them being better than this. And obviously their depth is something that's really not helping out too much. But they've lost huge stars, particularly on the defensive side, and it's really showing.
It really has. And now the decision not to take Sam Shields off of IR and Eddie Lacy basically means their season is over.
Yeah, and the concern with Shields, you know, is that his career may be over. I mean, that's the concern. And I think there, with his concussions, he's had multiple concussions. We know that in sports medicine, the risk of having additional concussions increases as you've had more of them. So he's very vulnerable to this. And so they're being very sensitive to that idea. I think they're hoping that perhaps if they give him the time to recover, maybe when he comes back, he'll be fortunate enough not to have this happen again. But I think he's probably one more hit away from having to call it a career, which is really a huge blow to him and, of course, to the team.
Do you know, and if they knew that you're one more hit away from maybe ending your career, if I'm him, I'm saying I'm done now then. I'm done now because that sport and that position he plays in as a defensive back, he gets hit in the head. I mean, it happens. It happens when he's making a tackle and another player comes to help with the tackle. I would say I'm done.
You know, one of the areas that you described really well, but it happened this time. He hit the ground.
Correct.
And, of course, when they tackle, they do that all the time. And so I think this is probably one of the things that's going through his mind, and I'm sure his family is talking to him about it as well. So, you know, I'm sure that he wants to continue to play, but I also think he probably wants to be able to have a clear head when he's older as well. And we don't know enough about this stuff to know for sure what's the limit.
Do you think one day we will?
Yes.
Good. I look forward to that day.
I very much do. I think there's been a lot of progress in terms of understanding metabolically what changes with these injuries. And there have already been preliminary tests demonstrating byproducts of damage in nerve tissue. There's some you know, as always, there are some disturbing trends. There was a study in youth sports this last year that showed that after the season, even in young peewee football, that there were changes neurologically, you know, even after that. And it wasn't necessarily correlated to a symptomatic concussion. So that's concerning. Now, nobody knows, does that lead to these problems later on? We don't know yet, but we do know that that happens. So that's you know, more evidence that makes people leery of these things. And you know, if you're a pro athlete and you've had them forever, it's concerning.
Where do you, and I can't ask you to look into the future, but sports as we know it, not only on the youth level, but on the college level, the professional level, I think is going to look dramatically different 15 to 20 years from now than it does today.
I think that's probably true. If you look historically, when we were growing up, the biggest sport was baseball, right? I mean, that was the biggest sport in the United States at the time, and that obviously has shifted a lot. And so things do change. We all kind of assume things will always be the same, but they're not, and things change. And now, do we know if football is going to go away? I certainly hope not. I love football, and I love to watch it, but if I knew that these people were sustaining brain injuries as they were students, then that would change this. And I think that's where we're kind of in this in-between phase where we know that some people have these problems and that that's really a concern, but we don't yet know what is the overall incidence and what is the overall risk. And I think this is why it's so difficult for people to make decisions about what to do.
And I think people outside of guys that play football are going to have to make these decisions, because I saw a piece where they went to guys who had been injured, and it wasn't just concussions, it was other injuries as well. And they said, if you had to do it all over again, and 100% of them said yes.
Yeah, and that's, you know, it depends. Is that legitimate, or is that what's considered so-called Stockholm syndrome, right, where you're in the midst of it and so you embrace it? It's hard to say, to be honest. And I think you're right about that. You know, look, hopefully we will either A, find ways to protect people from these damaging problems so that people can continue to play the great sport that we all love, including soccer and headers and all the and Australian rules football and rugby and all these other sports. It's not just American football.
Correct. Yep.
So hopefully that'll be the case. And if it's not the case, hopefully we're smart enough and capable enough to adapt to the facts that come that are new. If those facts show that this is damaging to the neurologic health of our athletes, especially at the collegiate and high school level, then we need to, as adults, say this isn't the best path. There are other sports that involve the same type of skills, and we need to move to those. Now, again, hopefully the first one is the case. But if, in fact, the data comes out and shows that the second one's the case and it's too dangerous for people to continue to play and not risk injury as students to their brain,
right,
then hopefully we're sensible enough not to let money and tradition get in the way of common sense, and we move forward to either changing the rules or whatever and protecting the athletes. I can tell you that as a sports medicine physician, we emphasize so much trying prevention, trying to engage people in understanding what's happening, but we're always keeping our ear to the tracks to listen to the information that's coming in and react to data, react to the reality, react to what's really happening there. And that's where, right at this moment, we're not completely certain, and that leads to a lot of questions.
Yeah, well, I'm hoping that one day, and I agree with you, one day we will be certain, and then we can make decisions from that. Again, he is Dr. Brian McCarty. You can go to mymosh.com for more information on Dr. McCarty. Hey, let's, in the time we have left in this segment, talk a little bit about some Wisconsin and Packer injuries. We have not talked about the young man from the Badgers, who is an unbelievable linebacker, Sitchi, who is out now, and we have not discussed his injury. We did before he came in studio. Your thought on that?
Well, he had a what's called a pectoralis major tear, and so the pec major is the big chest muscle that you have that you know you build by doing bench press or doing flies and that sort of thing. It's a very, very strong muscle, and it's not a very common injury, but it happens oftentimes in linebackers. So people old enough remember Spielman playing for the Ohio State and then for the Lions.
Chris Spielman. Yep.
Chris Spielman injured his, and I see this injury fairly frequently, usually in weightlifters, bodybuilders, but sometimes in football players. And what's interesting about it is it's very fixable. So this muscle is very large and the tendon is very small. So what they did with that is the tendon actually pulled away from the bone. He played for another two quarters with the injury, which is pretty amazing, really. I think he thought he had a bad bruise and he probably still had his pads on, so they didn't look to see that it was torn. And I know a lot of people said, well, how could they do this? Maybe it wrecks his shoulder. It will not. Okay, it's outside of the joint. So it won't have any long-term impact on him negatively, thank goodness. And what they did is they literally reinsert it into the bone, into the humerus bone, which is your arm bone. And you can put it right back where it used to be, and it'll heal at a very high rate. I've done lots of these myself, and people do extremely well from pec major repairs. So you see him on the sideline with the sling, and he's cheering. I think it's great. We always try to keep our athletes involved with their team.
Sure.
And certainly he's been able to do that.
Yeah, that's awesome. A couple,
but they're missing him, though.
They are missing him.
He's a great player.
And the defense is still playing at a pretty high level, but you know, it starts to the competition here starts to wrap up a little bit, and we'll see how they do. A couple of quick questions on the Packers. Clay Matthews played last week, and he I think they must have had him on a pitch count. Right, a play count, because he was off the field on some pretty major third down situations. And so he would play, didn't have a huge impact on the game, but I think they were testing that hamstring, and hopefully he's better this week.
Yeah, boy, these injuries are difficult to recover from. I don't know if you've ever injured your hamstring, but I
have.
I tweaked mine once, and it's the kind of thing where it as it heals, it feels great. And you're feeling better, and then you go out and you try to explode and do something quick, and you feel it go again, and then you're right back to the beginning. So I think what's difficult with this is that they're trying to bring him back in a way that he's not going to re-injure it, and I'm sure he's maybe 80%, but 80% of Clay Matthews is way better than anything they've got out there other than him. So I think when you don't see him out there on a major down, it's probably either scheme related, like they're expecting him to do certain things where they don't think he can do it, or he's, like you said, had his snaps in a row and they're trying to protect him. And you know what? That's not an exact science, people.
No.
They act like it is. And they talk like it is on television, but it's really not. There's not an exact number of snaps that a guy can go or whatever. But you'd use guidelines based on what's worked in the past, and I'm sure he contributes to that as well. And then you go from there. But, boy, if that defense doesn't get better, the Packers are going nowhere fast.
Anyway, yeah, no doubt. Hey, we've got to get to a break. Other side of the break, we'll continue our conversation with Dr. Brian McCarty. Again, go to mymosh.com for more information. This is the Midwest Orthopedic Sports Medicine Show on Sports Radio 105.7 FM, The Fan. Welcome back to the Midwest Orthopedic Sports Medicine Show on Sports Radio 105.7 FM, The Fan. I'm Mike McGivern alongside my co-host this week, Dr. Brian McCarty. You can go to mymosh.com for more information on Dr. McCarty. Dr. Brian, if we can start this segment, I know we're going to talk a lot about knee injuries, and we're right in the middle, or certainly the beginning, I should say, of basketball. And as a high school basketball coach, I get a chance to talk to a lot of coaches, and there's a lot of coaches talking about injuries this early, and though that doesn't surprise me, kids coming off football, going to play basketball, kids that haven't played, maybe not working out as hard as they should, coming to practice where we push these kids pretty hard. What surprised me is we've had, within the high school basketball community, a number of ACL injuries. And for some reason, maybe it's because I'm doing this show, but it seems like it's more than the norm.
Yeah, I mean, you know, I spend a lot of my life repairing ACL problems, and this has been a very interesting topic because things have changed a lot over the last 7 or 8 years in our understanding of how to treat them. The incidence of ACL injuries has not necessarily increased during that time, but the recognition of these injuries has increased. So what happens with this is it's a rotational injury. So most of the time in basketball, it's either because of a sharp cutting motion or very frequently it's a landing issue where the athlete lands on one leg, the leg is sort of awkwardly positioned, they feel a pop or a snap in the knee, and then they fall on the ground. And so the knee literally gives out, and they feel a sense of something rotating out of position. And the reason they feel that, Mike, is because that's what happens. So the ACL is responsible for preventing abnormal rotation inside the knee. So when it tears, that's exactly what happens. The femur bone, the top thigh bone, rotates off of the lower shin bone, or we call it the tibia, and it's often associated with other ligament injuries and meniscus tears. So for people listening at home, if you imagine in the very middle part of the knee joint, there are two ligaments that cross over each other, and they're right in the middle of the knee. One is called the ACL, which is the anterior cruciate ligament, and the other is called the PCL, or posterior cruciate ligament. And we're going to talk about all these ligaments today. The reason they're called cruciate is cruciate means cross, right? So they cross each other, and they're responsible for preventing twisting and abnormal motions inside the knee. One of the things that's been really interesting is I spent a lot of time doing research on where these ligaments really come from, and this may sound really obvious, but the sites on the femur bone and the tibia bone where the ligament comes from aren't always reproduced exactly with the surgeries, at least not traditional surgeries. So anatomic reconstructions, we actually find the source of your ligament where exactly the fibers are coming from the bone, and we make the new ligament exactly where your old one used to be.
Wow.
And that's why the outcomes are so much better, the stability is better. These ligaments actually have two bands, two bundles. So they're technically really two parts of one. If you imagine two ropes kind of folded over each other, that's kind of what they are. And so sometimes I do what's called a double bundle reconstruction, where we actually make two bands instead of one. You may say, well, why do you do that? I mean, the reason is because it often confers better stability to the joint. So not everyone needs that. Some people have a very round, more like a one big rope kind of anatomy. But some people have a very much a two bundle anatomy. And we're fortunately able now to be able to accommodate that as well. It's really pretty interesting, you know? And these are things that have evolved during my career, and something that we offer at Midwest Orthopedic Specialty Hospital are anatomic ACL reconstructions, both single and double bundle, which allows us a lot of flexibility to match your anatomy more accurately.
It's unbelievable what's happened in your career compared to where we were even 10 years ago.
Yes.
On this, Brian, it really is incredible to see some of the things that you guys are able to do. I had one of the coaches on our coaching staff over at Martin Luther, Nick Janicek, asked me, he said, why is it that this kid that we know is able to be out on his own shooting around on the basketball floor knowing he's having ACL the next day? Yet there are some guys that when they have this, they cart them off, and they have to have surgery immediately. And he asked me this, and I didn't know, so I thought I'd ask you: is there a different severity of ACL tears?
Yeah, there is. You know, when the ACL tears, the whole ligament tears 95% of the time. There very seldom you have partial injuries, but most of the time it's a complete injury. What is different is how much damage happens inside the joint. So I'll give you an example. So you may have someone who twists awkwardly and falls to the ground, like Jordy Nelson, for example. He's going to have a lower energy ACL injury, and he's less likely to have meniscus tears, cartilage injuries, bone bruising, all these other things that we see. We see people from the trampoline park as just an example. I'm not picking on the park, but because it's fun. But when you have somebody who's at a very high you know, height, and they have a lot of potential energy. They come down with a lot of force, and they land and they injure that ligament. They tend to do a lot of damage, and so they tend to have other ligaments that are torn, meniscus tears, cartilage tears, impaction fractures, not because of, you know, there's anything wrong with trampolining. It's just a matter of the amount of force that goes through the knee at the time of the injury.
So would they still call that an ACL?
Oh, yes.
So
that's where this confusion comes from, right? It's a little bit like concussion, right? You have a concussion, is it bad or, you know, so there's a severity grade. And, you know, when we look at it, of course, we're looking at all of these different ligaments. So we promised to talk about that. So there are different ligaments in the knee, right? And so the cruciate ligaments we described in the middle, but there are also ligaments on the sides of the knee called the collateral ligaments, and they stabilize it from side to side. So there's both a medial, which is on the inside part of your knee, sort of where the knees touch together, and then there's a lateral collateral on the outside part of the knee, where your fibula bone, that little bump on the side of your knee, is where that ligament is. And then it gets much more complicated because these things are really like a symphony working together. So there's a posterolateral corner set of ligaments. There are five different ligaments that are involved with that, and they're, you know, deep medial ligaments. So like anything else, as you get more information, you learn more about how these things work, you understand how it's much more complicated than it initially seems. And of course, we're not going to get into all of that when people ask, well, on the TV, they're going to say, oh, I had an MCL tear. And everybody's like, oh,
yeah. Oh, okay. Yeah.
But the reality is these are spectrum of injury things, right? And my job is I'm interested in anatomic restoration. So trying to bring that anatomy as close to normal as possible, that means understanding each individual part of what's wrong, and then we can rebuild the knee from there. And what's so rewarding about it, of course, is that it's great. You see your professional athlete back out on the field performing at an extremely high level. It's very rewarding. See your high school athlete back for his senior year, you know, being all conference. It's very rewarding. So we love to see that, and that's why it's so important. If you go to Midwest Orthopedic Specialty Hospital, you can learn more about these things, get a proper diagnosis, find people who spend their lives dedicated to this type of stuff so they can help you.
One question, last question before we get to a break. When we talked about that, it was interesting because when Jordy Nelson did it, he had an ACL. But then when Teddy Bridgewater, they talked about all of the different things that happen within that injury.
Yeah, well, the Teddy Bridgewater injury is one of the things that I see that's very complicated. So that's called a knee dislocation, and that can actually be limb-threatening, meaning you can actually lose your leg from that injury. And he was fortunate where he had an injury where his blood vessel, the main artery to the lower leg called the popliteal artery, was not injured. His nerves around the knee, which can be injured, like the peroneal nerve on the outside, was not injured for him. So he's had a couple of fortunate things. But I'm telling you, as someone who's put these things together in the past, sometimes you're putting together as many as 8 to 10 different ligaments and structures in one knee. That's a lot to recover from.
It's a lot to recover from. Let's get to a break. Other side of the break, we'll continue our conversation with Dr. Brian McCarty. Again, go to mymosh.com for more information on Dr. McCarty. This is the Midwest Orthopedic Sports Medicine Show on Sports Radio 105.7 FM, The Fan. Back to the Midwest Orthopedic Sports Medicine Show on Sports Radio 105.7 FM, The Fan. I'm Mike McGivern alongside Dr. Brian McCarty. Again, go to mymosh.com or call me if you want to know things about Dr. McCarty. Just one of my favorite people in the world. I think I've learned more from him doing this show than I could have ever thought I'd know. So, Dr. McCarty, quick question for you. We started talking about some of these high school kids from coaches that have called me and that I know about. It surprises me at times how quick some of these kids can get back from injury. Do they heal differently as younger people than we do as middle-aged people?
Yeah, we've learned about stem cells. You hear about this all the time, and on the news and so forth. Sometimes these terms are thrown around a little bit more liberally than I think they ought to be. But nonetheless, when you're young, you have very active cells, and that means that you can heal things more quickly. Now, it doesn't mean that you heal immediately either, but I've used the example with you, Mike, if in a newborn child, if they have a difficult delivery and they have a broken femur, for example, the biggest bone in the body, it literally heals in a week, in 1 week, and we're in an adult, it'd take 3 months. So the same principle would apply as you get a little bit older, right? So I see children and athletes at all ages. And so when I see my very young athletes, they usually heal faster. You know, one of my football/basketball players, who's one of the Marquette High coach's sons, he injured his finger and he broke it. And, we anticipated it would take about 6 weeks to heal. He comes in 4 weeks and the thing looks like nothing ever happened to it, because he's young and he healed it really quickly and it was great. But the fact is, each person has to go through that process and make sure they get there. What we always emphasize is, if you want to know how long it's going to take, get a diagnosis, right? Go to people who treat these types of injuries for a living. I tend to specialize in sports injuries. So no matter how old the child is or the athlete is, we can see you from the seniors, right? Remember, we had our senior softball and handball players on. And we have our young kids. I see a lot of gymnasts and basketball, football, baseball players. And we can give you a diagnosis and help you to get there. So we were talking in the break of a young 13-year-old gentleman who came in. He had a complete PCL tear. Now, we haven't talked much about the PCL, but that's an even bigger ligament than the ACL. And it's less commonly injured. And most often, it's not a complete tear because it's such a big ligament. But this young man had a complete tear. And fortunately, where his tear was, it was close to where the ligament inserts in the bone. So we were able to put a brace on him for a few weeks, came back, his stability was markedly improved, and he's going to do great with no surgery of any kind for what in an adult probably would have been a surgical injury. So this is the advantage of going where we have experience looking at that, so we can counsel you as to how to move forward.
It's also really important for parents and coaches that are listening that you guys specialize in sports injuries. Right?
Yes, that's correct.
And so I think it's important because I've heard from other coaches again that they're going to see their general, they're going to see the regular doctor, they're going to, urgent care, and not getting the advice. If this is a sports injury, my recommendation is to go to you guys. Go to mymatch.com for all the information you need on who to see on this. But I think it's important that people understand that.
Yeah, it's one of these situations where you get a lot of good advice from a lot of great doctors and practitioners out there, from athletic trainers, therapists, primary care, and so forth. And so we're not in any way saying that they're not helping, because of course they are. And many things they treat every day that we don't need to see. But if there's any question, and it's a subspecialty world, right? We all know more and more about these things, but you can't know everything. So if there's a question and you're wondering, well, how do I get from point A to point B in the most efficacious way, then it's best to come to somebody that does this all day long. And that's what I always have a sort of a contract with my patients that if I can get you out there safely, I will do so, right? So the fastest we can get you there safely, we will do that.
The other part about this, Dr. McCarty, is I'll get parents and I'll get coaches asking, look, this is, they'll say something like this. This is a kid that seems to get injured a lot. He's kind of drama. Don't worry about it. But when the symptoms are, there's a pop inside the knee, or significant knee swelling, which is a big deal within a few hours after the injury, black and blue, there are sure signs of, as a parent or as a coach, you have to make sure that you get these kids looked at.
Yeah, if your athlete doesn't want to participate, or they're limping around, or their knee is swollen, or you need to get them checked out. And you can't assume that that's going to go away. I'm a parent. I have three kids. There are a lot of things we all kind of ignore and we brush off. But those types of things you don't brush off and you don't ignore. So one of the things I was going to talk to you about was some of the things we do that are new. So one of the things that we do that's new is we often will now sort of augment or improve upon the ligament structure itself. So for example, for MCL, medial collateral ligament injuries, we often use now what's called an internal brace. And this is relatively new. I've only been doing this for a few years. And what we do is we put anchors that look like sort of like mollies, so to speak, that go into where the ligament comes from. And we put another one where it attaches, and we put a big heavy band of suture to help that ligament heal. Now, why would we do that? Well, we do it because it's helps to stabilize the knee while that ligament heals. So this is something we talk about all the time. So people put brace on the outside of the knee, but it's not nearly as effective as if you could put the brace inside the knee, right? So this is putting the brace. It's called an internal brace. And it's kind of, I've done just a couple in the last couple of weeks with ACL, MCL injuries where we do the ACL reconstruction and then we actually repair the medial ligament because it's completely torn. And then we add this internal brace system. And what's nice about it is it allows us to achieve early motion much more quickly, allows us to get you out of a brace much more quickly, allows you to get back playing a lot more quickly. So there's a lot of advantages to it that have been really beneficial. And one of our pro soccer players had this a couple of years ago, and I think his recovery back to being able to play professional sports is largely responsible to this device.
Can I ask you a question about that? So when you started doing the internal brace, and you said a couple of years ago is when you started, do you practice this before you?
Of course.
Is it something that you go about for a few months practicing before you actually try it?
Yeah, I wouldn't say a few months because remember, we do this for a living, right?
Right.
So, I mean, I it's not like the anatomy is new or the approaches are new surgically, but I absolutely do. And when I started doing anatomic ACL reconstruction, we were doing something new. I mean, this was not something that people were doing. So we went in and we did cadaver labs and we worked on these things and rehearsed them and practiced them. And my whole team did. So myself and my assistants. And we did several of them until we were very comfortable with each step along the process. And, you know, it's so rewarding is it's seamless now, right? So everything we do with that is just like, not, you know, it's like no big thing. And that's the same with this. So when you first do it, of course you practice. Of course you try it and you make sure that it makes sense and that you know everything that you need to know going in. That's a good point.
Yeah. Do you then, and let's stay with internal bracing if we can. How excited are you, you know, the next three or four times you're going to see that patient to be able to see how this is working? And, I mean, that's got to be kind of fun for you to say, look, we know this is going to work, and now let's go ahead and do it. And a month later or 2 months later to see this patient and see how well they're doing.
Yeah, what's neat about it is that you can accelerate what you couldn't do with rehab before because you were so worried about them tearing this. You feel more confident. And as you let them do more with the rehabilitation, you start seeing that, wow, you know, this is making a huge clinical difference. Like anatomic ACL, for example, makes a huge clinical difference. The difference between what I saw 10 years ago or what I see, because I see a lot of revision surgeries where they've been done before and the grafts aren't, maybe they're a little bit more vertical than they ought to be or whatever. It's so rewarding to be able to change that for someone and have them come back and go, now it feels normal. Now it feels like a normal knee to me. That is what we practice for. That's what we do this for.
Man, that's awesome. We're going to get to a break. Dr. McCarty, I've got some questions for you on the other side of the break regarding what patients need to do after the surgery.
That's great.
Because there's some questions that I'm getting on again, from high school coaches that I'm going to need to get some answers for. They've asked me to ask them on this show, and I'll do that on the other side of the break. This is the Midwest Orthopedic Sports Medicine Show on Sports Radio 105.7 FM, The Fan. Welcome back to the Midwest Orthopedic Sports Medicine Show on Sports Radio 105.7 FM, The Fan. I'm Mike McGivern alongside my co-host, Dr. Brian McCarty. Go to mymosh.com for more information on Dr. McCarty. So in the short time we have in this last segment, Dr. McCarty, I want to talk to you about this. I've had a number of coaches. Again, we've had some basketball injuries. And some kids that got hurt in football, now trying to get back to play basketball. And the common thread between some of this is these kids aren't doing what they're supposed to do after surgery or after being seen. And, you know, they go see their sports medicine doctor, and the doctor says, look, here's what you have to do. If you do this, possibly by December 1st, you can get back. Then they go and see him. And the doc says, look, you got another 4 weeks, not nearly where you need to be. And then the kid admits, well, I haven't really been doing any of that stuff. And it seems to really be rampant with some of this.
Yeah, we call that compliance, right? And there are different components of this. Part of it is I make a really big deal, and my team makes a big deal out of explaining to the patient and to the family and to the trainer and to the coaches what's the problem. And what do they need to be doing to get better so that they understand why? A lot of the reason they don't do it is because they don't understand the why of why is it that I have to be in this brace after my repair? Why is it that I have to be on crutches? Now, or why can I be off of the brace? Why can I be off? You know, so we make a big deal of educating them so they understand that, and that helps improve this, okay? The second part of it is you have a team. Everybody's got to work together, but the person that's most responsible for your recovery is still you. You know, you still have to do that work. You need to be informed about what to do and why to do it, how to do it, but then ultimately you have to do it. And so we have that conversation as well.
I think that's really important because some of these players and kids then look at the parents or look at the coaches or look at the doctor more than anything,
yep,
and say, wait a second, you told me this, and now you're telling me it's another week or another 2 weeks, another 4 weeks, when ultimately, if you dig deep enough and this kid's honest, he's going to tell you that he did not do what he was supposed to do.
Yeah, what's interesting about it, Mike, is that we can tell almost immediately whether they've been doing it or not, because it's obviously we do it for a living, right? So when you come in and I look at your knee and I can see how it's moving, I can see how your muscles are developing, I can tell what you've been doing and what you haven't. And it's very rare that that's not the case. So, you know, look, we're advocates for the patient. That's why we do everything. We do it so that you can get better and get back on the field or get back to work or get back to whatever it is that you want to be doing. So we're going to do everything that we can to help you with that. What we're not going to do is tell you it's okay to do it if it's not safe, because we don't want the patient back with another injury.
Question for you. You're going to help me on this one because I didn't have the answer, and I should have, because we discussed this maybe a year ago. But a parent came to me and said, look, the doctor told my son that he has what's called jumper's knee. Can you explain that to me? And I said, you know what? Let me bring that up on my show. I know that we talked about it a year ago. I don't have the answer for you. Explain in basketball, and I don't know if this is in other sports. I'm sure it is volleyball.
Yeah.
But explain when somebody uses the term jumper's knee, what that means.
Well, the actual jumper's knee is a problem with the patellar tendon. So it's actually a patellar tendonitis, or we call it tendinosis, meaning there's something abnormal about usually the top part of that tendon. So classic jumper's knee is pain just below the kneecap, and sometimes it's actually partially torn there, and those are the ones that don't tend to go away. So it's more common in jumping athletes because most tendon injuries occur during what's called eccentric contraction. I don't mean to be getting too technical.
That's all right.
But eccentric contraction means that it's the contraction your muscle makes when the muscle is lengthening. So you can imagine when you're landing, the quad muscle or the muscle in front of your thigh is tightening, right? But it's lengthening at the same time, and that's to decelerate your land. Does that make sense?
It does. That's probably why I never had a problem with it, because I wasn't coming down very far.
Yeah, you and I never really, I don't think I ever skied up too high either, but nonetheless, I felt like I did. But when you're landing, that tendon can sometimes partially get injured, and it leads to kind of chronic pain in that area, and that's what jumper's knee is. So again, rehabilitation is the primary means of fixing that problem. And so you have to work on hip strength, quad strength, things that people don't normally think about, right? So why would you need your hips to be stronger for that? Well, when you're landing, if your hips aren't strong, your knee caves inward and it puts more strain on the tendon, for example. So these are why, you know, when we see it, we can help you with that.
Another question. I had breakfast with my son Matthew recently, and he injured his hamstrings playing college basketball. And he's been now removed from college basketball for, I don't know, 3 years or so. And he said, Dad, it's still an issue. Like, I still feel it. And is that something that he's just going to have to live with? Or is there some things that he can do as he's trying to strengthen or to get that back to... Yeah, it hasn't been 100% probably since his sophomore year in college.
Yeah, that's a great question. What do you do with a chronic injury that hasn't resolved? Oftentimes, it's a rehab issue. A lot of times, if he went to see maybe for a visit or two with a therapist, they teach him how to do some deep tissue work, use a foam roller on the hamstrings. Oftentimes, they can get rid of that chronic issue that you have, like that he's been experiencing, and you can be rid of it. So, you know, there is a reason all these people do these things. Right. And we always talk about the sports medicine team, don't we? So
yes.
The combination of the trainers and the therapists and the nurses and the techs and the doctors and you know, nutritionists and psychologists and all this working together. This is why we're all trying to help the patient, all trying to help the athlete get back out there. We all have our different areas that we have knowledge. So for your son, going to see a good manual therapist, somebody who can really get in there and help him work through those things, probably going to fix that problem.
I hope he's listening.
It's pretty cool, right?
It is. It's really cool. Last question before we have to get out. We've got kids that just finished, kids at Catholic Memorial, right? Win the state championship. Kids at Kimberly, Franklin. I was getting there. Brookfield East. Weren't you the doctor there?
I was. For many, many years. Joe Szczynski, big shout out to Joe. The trainer's awesome. Amazing there.
He's really good.
The whole coaching staff
big,
and that
big
school.
Fans.
I'm so proud of those kids.
I am too. These kids that are coming off the field and now going to the court, they're using different muscles. What is coaching? You know, what can we do as coaches to get them into basketball shape rather than, you know, just try to throw them right in with basketball players and think that their legs are going to be fine?
Yeah, you know what it is? It's gradual progression, right? So build up that training. Don't do it all in one day. That's the biggest mistake coaches make is they get them, and it's my thing right now.
My way.
And,
yep.
And most coaches are harder in the kids during tryouts than they are during the end of the season. And if you think about it, that really doesn't make a lot of sense. So build the kids in and build them up to that sport. You know, you push them for sure, but you push them steadily instead of all of a sudden.
Hey, it's really good to see you again.
Hey, it's great to see you,
Dr. Brian, it's just such an honor and a pleasure to do this show with you. Go to mymosh.com. More information on Dr. Brian McCarty. Thanks for listening. This is the Midwest Orthopedic Sports Medicine Show on Sports Radio 105.7 FM, The Fan.